Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, we're going to be opening up our program this morning, returning to a state agency that plays a very, very critical role here, especially on behalf of our workforce. I'm talking about the Connecticut Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities. You may have heard to them being referred to as the CHRO office. They work to eliminate discrimination through civil and human rights law enforcement and establish equal opportunity and justice for all persons within the state through advocacy and education. We're going to meet our guests in just a moment, but first we want to remind you that Griffin Health's Valley Goes Pink initiative is hosting its third annual Par for the Pink Golf fundraiser Tuesday, May 21st at the Golf Club at Oxford Greens in Oxford, with proceeds benefiting the Hewitt Center for Breast Wellness at Griffin Hospital. The Valley Goes Pink is a grassroots community-wide effort to increase awareness about breast cancer and the importance of early detection, to support the Hewitt Center for Breast Wellness at Griffin Hospital, and to celebrate the charitable spirit of the region's business organizations. For more information about the upcoming event and about joining the campaign, just visit griffinhealth.org/pink. So as we said briefly a few moments ago, our guests are here today from Connecticut's Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities, and I'm so pleased to welcome Cheryl Sharp. She is CHRO's Deputy Director, and Michelle Dumas-Kuehler. She's Managing Director at CHRO's Housing Training Legal Division. They've got a couple of events coming up, and we're going to invite you to participate in one or possibly even both of them right after we kind of orient you a little bit more about all of the different things that CHRO does. We joked a little bit before we turned on the microphone that a lot of people across the state of Connecticut have certainly benefited from being involved with CHRO individually, and then maybe others not so much. So we're going to dig in a little bit, starting with you, Cheryl. Thanks for joining us. Beyond that introduction, which was pretty broad, when people bump into you and say, oh, CHRO, I heard about you guys when somebody got fired or there was a problem in the workplace, but that is far from just the only thing that you guys do in terms of advocating for workers in workforce situations, right?
Yes, of course. We are an enforcement agency, but we're also a training agency, an advocacy agency, and we are here to eliminate discrimination. And I have a fun fact for you. We are the oldest government-sponsored civil rights agency in the country. So when you look at our nation and how civil rights evolved, we are right there as pioneers, being the oldest governmental sponsored civil rights agency in the nation. And we don't only do employment cases. We also do cases involving housing, which Attorney Michelle Dumas-Kuehler will talk about, credit transactions, and in places of public accommodation, like hospitals and stores and restaurants and parks and anywhere that the public is invited to use services. And I am so excited about the work that our agency actually does. We issue blue papers on subject matter that is related to civil rights law enforcement. We initiate, take, prosecute, investigate, adjudicate complaints of discrimination that are filed by individuals who are here in Connecticut. So we hope that everyone who's experienced CHRO has had a good experience, even if they have not won their case. Not every case that is filed with us is going to be successful.
Sure.
But we strive to provide the best services possible.
And those who don't undoubtedly would be best served to learn from them at least, right?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I see that one of your primary initiatives is to monitor compliance with state contract compliance laws and with laws requiring affirmative action in state agency personnel practices. So affirmative action has been a term that has sort of resurrected in the news a little bit more over the past few years. Tell me what affirmative action within the guidelines that you folks work in enforcing and monitoring practices in state agencies. What does that look like right now in the state of Connecticut?
Sure. The affirmative action analysis that we've always conducted, we continue to conduct. Affirmative action in the state of Connecticut is a little different than in other states. The traditional definition of affirmative action is that it is to remedy a past wrong, whereas in the state of Connecticut, we're looking at parity. Who is available in the workforce? What does the state agency's workforce look like? And is there an underutilization in such that goals need to be set in order to have the race sex category brought up to parity? So if there are available, 7% African American women or Hispanic men to do a specific job, and your workforce only reflects that you have 2%, then there is an underutilization, and there is some capacity for, as you are hiring or promoting individuals, to bring in those protected class statuses, those race, sex categories. And so we have a wonderful team of affirmative action professionals that is led by the supervisor who has 45 years of experience doing affirmative action analysis for the state of Connecticut. And they receive the affirmative action plans, review them. The EEO specialists from state agencies across the state prepare their affirmative action plans. And it's not it's a living document. It is not a stagnant document. And its importance is really underscored by the fact that complaints of discrimination are filed against private companies, but the state of Connecticut is one of the largest employers, and we receive fewer complaints against the state of Connecticut with the number of employees that they have because of affirmative action and because we are actively, as a state, looking at our hiring and promotional goals and making sure that we're making decisions objectively and not basing our decisions on factors that are vestiges from a world of decades ago where we made judgments about specific protected classes. So our affirmative action plan is on skates. We're up, we're running, and we're doing the analysis on a monthly basis at our commission meetings and presenting them to our commissioners for them to adopt the decision of the staff person or analyst who's worked on the analysis or they also have the authority to, offer a different position or take a different position than the one that's been recommended by our staff.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, no matter who a person is, they want to interact when they have to with a government agency, whether it's a Connecticut State Trooper or someone from CHRO or DMV or DOT or you name the combination of alphabet soup. If they're interacting either on their own volition or someone from the state of Connecticut is visiting them for some reason, it goes a long way if the individual representing the state looks like the individual who's being contacted. And I have to say, because I know you guys don't like to, really pat yourselves in the back, on the back too much, but Connecticut's makeup of state employees looks a lot more like the communities that they serve today than I think ever has in my 50 years of paying attention to it. So I know a lot of that credit goes to CHRO. So I very much appreciate that. And I hope our listeners think about that and appreciate it too.
We'll take those accolades. Thank you very much. And for us, it is not that the person that is providing you with the service has to look like you. It's that they're trained, they're skilled, they're qualified, and that diversity is important. We want to have diverse individuals invited to the table, not to just have a seat, but to have impact, to have a voice. And that is also, we believe, rounding out our mission. It's important for workplaces to be diverse. It's important for neighborhoods to be diverse. It's important for the same opportunities to be provided to all individuals, irrespective of their immutable trait, because that's what a protected class is, a trait that you have that is immutable, that it cannot be stomped out. It is who you are. And we all just want to be treated fairly, right, based on not our protected class status necessarily, but just because we're people here living together and growing together. So sometimes we think, you know, people get caught up in, oh, if I am Latino, then I have to have a Latino service rep assist me. That is not what we believe. We believe that if there's diversity and there are some Latino representatives, that's what is important, because now they can converse with their colleagues and there is more of a cultural competency and cultural understanding that is necessary in our society. Yeah. And that is what we are trying to achieve.
Yeah, you create that connectedness for sure. Well, I'm going to give you a quick breather, Cheryl, and meet Michelle Dumas-Kuehler. Michelle, you're managing director at CHRO's Housing Training Legal Division. And, we talked about affirmative action with Cheryl, but one of the other things that we talk about a lot on the award-winning For the People on this program is the issues with housing. And as housing gets more expensive, but yet the workforce keeps demanding bodies to fill jobs. We have a lot of individuals who want to come into the state of Connecticut to work and to live and to build a life and a family. And they're facing huge hurdles in terms of finding that place to live. How does your department play a role in helping ensure that the housing that is available, the housing stock in any of our communities, is open and accessible to the most number of people who might be seeking it?
That's a great question. Thanks, John, for having me, too. So April, conveniently, is Fair Housing Month. And the Fair Housing Act, the federal, was passed in 1968 in order to address these deficiencies in how people are treated and how people are looked at when they are seeking housing. You really kind of narrowed all the issues down. We have a lot of people who would really like to be in Connecticut and even stay in Connecticut, but we don't have enough affordable housing. It is a constant issue. We don't have enough housing in general, but we certainly don't have enough affordable housing. You know, when you're driving down the street and you see housing being built, it's likely not affordable housing. It's what we call market rate housing. And there is a large amount of people who cannot afford market rate housing because it's just priced out of the way of many, many people who have jobs that are great jobs. You know, people who are teachers or who work in towns at various jobs. And, you know, my nephew does maintenance for a school system. Those jobs are great working wages, but they don't come with great working housing associated with it. And it's been a real struggle in Connecticut to build affordable housing. And part of that, there's a lot of reasons why, but one of the bigger reasons is because we have local rule. We have 169 towns with zoning in each of those towns, and those zoning boards decide what gets built in those towns. And, you know, based on kind of the discrimination that goes along with certain groups, it prevents that from being built. But in general, when we're talking about housing, people are protected based on the color of their skin, where they're from, whether they have disabilities, whether they have children, where their income comes from in order to pay their unit. Source of income protection is a big protection in Connecticut. We don't have that everywhere. So if somebody has a rental subsidy, a housing provider on their face can't just deny somebody housing because they pay with a rental subsidy. So we take individual complaints and we work on those complaints, seeing if there's discrimination or not. We also have a big mediation program in place. We really try to settle cases early where they can settle, because that's the best result for parties who come before us.
Very good. So since it is Fair Housing Month, the CHRO is fulfilling yet another major initiative, and that is helping to educate the community. So with that in mind, folks can get on their mobile devices or on their computers on April 25th for a mid-morning webinar that your organization, CHRO, is producing. Let's hear a little bit about what that's about, Michelle.
So we have a webinar that is about fair housing discrimination and particularly mortgage lending discrimination. We have a great panel from University of Connecticut Storrs Business School, Real Estate School. We have our person from HUD, who is the director of this region. We have several attorneys from the Connecticut Fair Housing Center who specialize in mortgage helping people who are in the process of being foreclosed on their mortgages, either they're in default or there's other issues going on. And it's really a way for people to see what mortgage lending discrimination looks like, particularly if they're involved with having some mortgage practices that were brought against them. The big housing crash in 2008, which caused the recession, was based on mortgage lending discrimination. Loans were provided to people. They were predatory loans based on race and color, national origin, age and gender. And they were given to people who couldn't afford them. And they were also given to people at rates that were not attainable. And those rates were given to those protected classes. So we're going to talk a lot about what that looks like. And I'm very solution oriented. So it's also going to be how you can get help if you need it. We're also going to talk generally about CHRO services. So that, again, we're always wanting to be a resource to people in order to get them the help that they potentially need.
Great. So people can just go to ct.gov/CHRO to register and get more information about that and everything that this Department of the State of Connecticut is all about. ct.gov/CHRO to sign up for the April 25th webinar that runs from 10 a.m. to noon online. So we hope you'll tune in for that. But add to the burden, it's not enough to just try to put together a successful webinar. CHRO is going one better just a little over a week later. So we'll go back to Cheryl Sharp, the CHRO Deputy Director. Cheryl, on May 1st, you guys want to pack the Connecticut State Armory in Hartford. What's going on?
Yes, we want to pack that armory with our Community Access and Equity Fair. The legislature entrusted the CHRO to administer an equity study to determine, looking at the 23 executive branch agencies, whether or not one or two of their programs, there was accessibility to all communities, or were marginalized communities not having the access they needed, or were low-income communities not having access, who was having access to the services of the government. And so as that equity study has been completed, we want to roll it out to the community. We have already signed up with us 40 state agencies or local agencies or non-governmental agencies to bring information, solutions, provide assistance to the public. We are offering free lunch for individuals who participate in the program. We have a housing seminar. We have a contract compliance seminar that will help individual contractors who are interested in conducting business with the state of Connecticut on their public works projects. We are so lucky that we have the commissioner of the Department of Administrative Services who will be joining us. We have the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, that is partnering with us on this project. And the public can hear from experts about policing in the community and how it can be done fairly and impartially, because we have the Connecticut Racial Profiling Project that will be joining us. We also have our very own Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Committee of the CHRO, who is going to be conducting a training. In addition to that, we have CLEs available for attorneys who practice before the CHRO. We're going to give attorney Michelle Dumas-Kuehler and attorney Kim Jacobson, both managing attorneys at our agency, they're going to be doing a training regarding practice before the CHRO. So we have a little something for everyone. We have DOT is coming, DMV, DSS, DAS, and the list goes on and on. Like I said, there are 40 state agencies. Secretary of State will be talking about equity and how do we achieve equity in our state? How does the public access that equity? So it is from 9:30 to 3 o'clock with a special event from 3 to 4 for those who are going to take the buses. We have a Get on the Bus campaign from all across the state in major cities so that individuals from the general public who don't have transportation but who want to participate, they can get there. They can just have to go to our website and register, ct.gov/CHRO, and they will see community access and equity fair. We are hoping to get broad participation. We want to pack the place. I just found out today also that the yard goats are coming, and I believe their mascot is going to be joining us as well. So like I said, there is a little bit for everyone, and we are really excited to bring the government to the people, because we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, and we are opening up the state of Connecticut, and we have all of or most of our sister agencies participating at this point, so that now the public has full access in one room to all of state government and some of the federal government as well. So again, that is on May 1st, which is a Wednesday, I believe, from 9:30 until 3 o'clock.
Very good.
Free lunch and snacks for everyone.
All right. We appreciate you both coming on the program and talking about both what the CHRO does and these excellent events that you're offering to help educate folks in the state and those who practice and interact with the CHRO, the Connecticut Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities. They're eliminating discrimination through civil and human rights laws enforcement and establishing equal opportunity and justice for all persons within the state through advocacy and education. We appreciate you being part of our broadcast here on For the People. Cheryl Sharp, CHRO's Deputy Director, and Michelle Dumas-Kuehler, who's Managing Director at CHRO's Housing Training Legal Division. Her seminar coming up on the web April 25th, and of course, the big Access and Equity Fair at the Connecticut State Armory in Hartford coming up on May 1st. Find out more about both of them at ct.gov/CHRO. Thank you both for your time this morning. Well, we hope you caught our first segment featuring the Connecticut Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities, CHRO. They've got some really exciting stuff coming up in terms of activities and education, but we're going to keep the education theme rolling right now, because as much as we work with our partners at Better Business Bureau and the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection, and especially our friends at AARP, sadly, the statistics related to victims keeps going up, and the amount of prosecution of the unscrupulous individuals that are separating people from their hard-earned money, sometimes their life savings, the proportion of arrests and prosecution is going down. So that means everything is running in the wrong direction, and we want to try to help with that. Kelly Leffler is with us. She is with AARP Connecticut. She is the Associate State Director of Community Outreach. Kelly, how are you this morning?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. And sadly, as we mentioned, it seems like more and more folks are getting duped and losing money, and fewer of those that are perpetrating these crimes are getting caught, never mind getting prosecuted. So it really appears that it is becoming more and more incumbent on potential victims to be better protected and better equipped. I'm echoing the sentiment that we heard about over the course of our three-part AARP and You series last year in 2023, when we had such great sources from AARP who were kind of pounding the drum about prevention. But apparently new scams are developing by the day, if not by the hour, and more and more people are falling victim to them. So let's talk a little bit about the 5,000 foot level. What are you seeing at AARP Connecticut in terms of the willingness and the ability of the general public to arm themselves and protect themselves against these scammers?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, fraud is one of our number one priorities here at AARP, and certainly AARP Connecticut. And we do see a lot of interest in the subject within the community. But unfortunately, some people think that they have it kind of covered, right? They know not to trust the Prince of Nigeria that's asking them for money. But unfortunately, these scammers are becoming more and more sophisticated. So the Federal Trade Commission just released its annual report for 2023 and found that for the first time, the amount of money stolen from frauds or scams reached $10 billion. That's billion with a B. That's 14% higher than just the previous year. And these are just the scams that are reported. And we know that that number is much higher because there is such a negative connotation to being a victim of a fraud or scam. So many people don't even report it.
Yeah, that's the hard part, is the idea that they're, you know, literally the tip of the iceberg. It encompasses those who are reporting it. So certainly, you know, that number in the billions that you quoted is significantly higher. So you're helping to bring some tools to the general public to help them combat and hopefully beat the scammers before they can get a hold of the information that they need to be able to do their bad deeds. So the first thing we want to talk about is this brand new released FTC data on scams, Consumer Sentinel Network Data Book 2023. What are a couple of the other things that the Federal Trade Commission is pointing out in terms of the trends that you're seeing here in Connecticut?
Yeah, so, you know, the number one scam that is taking the most money, according to the FTC, are investment scams. So investment scams took about $4.6 billion out of that $10 billion amount. And a lot of those investment scams are connected to cryptocurrency. So that's something that we want people to be super careful about. And you know, you talked about how, you know, the scams are still rampant. And a lot of the scams that we see are the same scams that scammers have been doing for decades, but they're using new technology and they're using, you know, advancements to kind of wrap it up in a neat new package that seems super legitimate, but unfortunately never is.
Yeah, the bright shiny object of cryptocurrency, I guess, is super attractive. And the irony is, so few people really understand what cryptocurrency is, and yet when somebody may call them or in some other way contact them, perhaps using the name of a friend or acquaintance or a business colleague or somebody who referred them. Hey, we think we heard from your coworker there at XYZ company that a few of you might be interested interested in investing in cryptocurrency. So we're really working to help your friend, and we'd like to help share the wealth kind of thing, and trying to gain their trust, right?
Right. And, you know, it's easy enough to find that information just by going on social media. They can connect you with your loved ones, your grandchild, your coworkers, as you mentioned. And that brings me to another point, which is that the most frequently reported scam is an imposter scam. So, you know, they get more money out of you with an investment scam, but it's more common that you'll see an imposter scam. So that's, you know, the age-old grandparent scam, which is also, you know, coming back around with the use of artificial intelligence. We could talk about that in a few minutes.
Yeah.
It can also be scammers pretending to be the IRS and saying that you immediately owe money on your taxes or, you know, we'll throw you in jail. So imposter scams is the most popular one right now.
Yeah, and like the old carny trick, they get one or two pieces of maybe lesser known information about you to make you think that they are legit, right?
Right, exactly. And it doesn't have to be social media. I know a lot of people in the community say, well, that's not a problem. I don't use social media. Well, you know, they can get information from something like an obituary. If you see an obituary, it names all of the family members of that loved one. So they know that there's something to be stolen from you, and B, you're in a vulnerable state, so you're the prime target.
Well, that's certainly disturbing. And as we kind of look across the landscape of scams, before we take a quick break, we're also going to introduce something in regards to celebrities, the celebrity scam. What's that all about?
Yes. So, you know, if you are on social media, a lot of times your favorite celebrity might be, you know, posting something on Facebook or Instagram. And a lot of times if you comment on that, scammers will see that and they will send you a direct message pretending to be the celebrity or maybe even the representative of a celebrity. And it will seem really legitimate, and they'll ask you, you know, either for money to give to a charity of their choosing, or maybe you've won exclusive tickets, or you owe, you know, fees for a giveaway. And sometimes in certain cases, it's even turns into a romance scam that your favorite celebrity is in love with you. And again, I think it's very easy on the outside to say that seems silly, you know, who would fall for that? But if you're getting out of the blue, if I'm getting a message from my favorite celebrity, I'm not thinking straight. You know, you get excited, you want this to be real. And unfortunately, that is becoming more common. Mm. It's also been heightened with the use of artificial intelligence. You know, we can have fake videos of celebrities. We've seen that going around as well. So if you do get a message from your favorite celebrity, I really urge you to use judgment and take a beat before responding.
Very good. Kelly Loeffler is with Connecticut AARP. She's the Associate State Director of Community Outreach. We're going to come back and talk mostly about the use of AI as well as a quick additional warning about romance scams. So stick around. There's a lot to learn from our friends at AARP Connecticut about these scams and how they're still ripping off folks to the tune of billions and billions of dollars every year. Stay with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this. Before we get back to our chat with AARP, we want to remind you, hey, it's planting season. Memorial Day is coming. You want to get your perennials and your trees and shrubs, and you want to make sure that they are native. And that's where Yukon Extension and Connecticut DEEP's Wildlife Division comes into play. They've just released an updated list of Connecticut businesses that grow and or sell native trees and shrubs. And for the first time, perennials are included. They're compiled from a survey of both wholesale and retail businesses. The Connecticut Native Tree, Shrub, and Perennial Availability List identifies nurseries and garden centers that sell Connecticut native tree, shrubs, and perennials. So the guide was created to assist municipalities, conservation organizations, homeowners, landscape architects, designers, and contractors with locating native plants for habitat restoration and wildlife enhancement. If you'd like to check it out and get yourself a copy and get planting, just go to the letter S. UConn.edu/CT Native Availability, or just web search for the Yukon Extension Guide for Native Tree, Shrub, and Perennial Availability. Well, we're back with Kelly Loeffler. She's Associate State Director of Community Outreach for AARP Connecticut. You know, AARP is the nation's largest nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that's dedicated to empowering Americans 50 and older to choose how they live as they age. With a nationwide presence, AARP strengthens communities and advocates for what matters most to the more than 100 million Americans who are 50 plus and their families. Health, security, financial stability, and personal fulfillment. We really enjoy our conversations with AARP, particularly around the way they are help building community with a number of grant initiatives, but also equally important, the advice and guidance that they can give you so that scammers don't separate you from your hard-earned wages, or in many cases, unfortunately, a good portion, if not all, of your life savings. So, Kelly, let's just spend a minute or two talking about the latest iterations of the romance scam, because if I understand correctly, that one is also very little reported and is really, really taking a lot of people for a bad ride.
Yeah. So unfortunately, that's, as you said, that's one that people really don't want to report because they're so emotionally involved in it that it's just too much. There's too much shame associated with it. So when it comes to romance scams, you know, a lot of people are meeting potential partners online now. They're using dating apps or they're using Facebook. And this is a particularly interesting scam because the scammer will wait a very long time. They will get to know you and, you know, probably dozens of other victims for months, if not years at a time, and really build their trust with you so that, you know, you are fully in love with this person. And then all of a sudden, you know, they really want to come see you. Maybe they're from out of state, maybe even out of country. They want to see you, but they just had some car trouble. They had to pay off their car, so they don't have money for plane tickets. Well, that's where you can step in and help them get those plane tickets, right? Or maybe, you know, I was coming to see you, but my car did break down and I need $5,000 to help fix it and get it back on the road. So they build up that trust. It's not an immediate ask. And I think that's a common misconception.
And if I heard correctly, Kelly, a lot of times, even when people have hard evidence right in front of them that this individual either immediately or eventually appears to not have their true heart, as the focus, they continue because they're already hooked, right?
Right. Just like you said, they're already hooked. They already have found love with this person. And, you know, it's not like a one ask of money and then they disappear. They'll ask for a little bit of money and then things will go back to normal. You'll have your normal conversations and keep making plans for the future. And it's really tough as any human to make those plans for the future and then to be told or to get yourself to understand that this person is not being honest with you. And that's really tough for anybody.
Very good. Well, let's finish up our conversation going back to the subject of artificial intelligence and how it is being employed in the world of unscrupulous scammers here in Connecticut. What have you seen in terms of the way AI is being manipulated to separate people from their money?
You know, it's interesting. Artificial intelligence is probably the number one question right now that we're getting when we're out in community. And I think it's just because there's been so much popularity, and it seems like you can't go a day without hearing about a new use for artificial intelligence. So we are getting that question a lot. I will say it is not the number one scam right now. I think scammers are still kind of playing with it, but they are starting to use it to up their game with some of these scams. So, for instance, I mentioned earlier the grandparent scam. Well, now we know that there are indeed ways for scammers to use artificial intelligence to mimic the sound of a loved one's voice. So, you know, it's not just that your grandchild is calling to say that they're in trouble with the law. Now it legitimately sounds like them. That's probably the main example that we've been hearing. So we suggest to people that, you know, the next time you're with your family and you're all gathered around for dinner, it might sound a little silly at first, but come up with some sort of code word. It could be something really random like laptop. And if you are on the phone and they're, you know, you're trying to figure out if this is actually your loved one, you have that code word to either ask them what it is so that you know that it's legitimate.
Well, that's a fantastic idea. And it's something much like, the inevitable changing of the batteries in the smoke detector or the turning forward or back of the clocks for daylight savings that people can plan to do maybe, once a year, come up with a new family code word because sadly, this is the society that we're living in. So in closing, Kelly, can you let people know whether they're AARP members or not? Of course, that's really important to reinforce that your data and guidance and tips to prevent getting scammed are available to all, right?
Yes, they are. So everyone, you said it earlier, you said it best, that continuing education is the most important thing, because the second we've, you know, figured out how to stop one scam, there's another one right behind it. So what I always suggest for folks is to go to aarp.org/FraudWatchNetwork. And that's whether you're an AARP member or not. You can, there are articles about some of the latest scams, there are podcasts, and I think, you know, the best piece of ongoing education is that you can sign up for biweekly emails that talk a little bit about what we're seeing in the fraud space. The other important thing I will say is, you can also find on the website our Fraud Watch Network helpline. If you think that you've been a victim of a fraud or scam, you can reach out to this Fraud Watch Network helpline. Maybe you're not ready to necessarily go to the police yet. You want to talk it through. And this is a helpline that is manned wholly by volunteers across the country that can talk you through your situation and give you some specific examples and next steps to help you along the way.
And if folks are specifically interested in getting AARP's comprehensive take on artificial intelligence, you've also got a webinar, right?
We do, yes. So this year for AARP in AARP Connecticut, we are starting to do webinars every other month. They're only 30 minutes. The next one is on April 26th. It's Friday, April 26th at 12 p.m. And we each month we focus on a different fraud or scam. So this month we are focusing more on artificial intelligence. So it's going to be you know, the basics of what exactly is artificial intelligence, because that's the first step, right, is understanding the technology. Mm. And then what are we looking at for how it's being used and how to protect yourself?
Excellent. Thank you, Kelly. Appreciate it. As always, great information from our friends at AARP and AARP Connecticut. Kelly Loeffler is the Associate State Director of Community Outreach. And over the past 18 minutes or so, you've heard why she got that job. Kelly, excellent. Thank you for all this great information. We hope it has done some good, and we wish you luck, and we'll be talking to you again. Thank you. Well, at the beginning of this season, we had the pleasure of meeting and chatting with Maestro Eduardo Leandro. And now we are reaching the end of the Greater Bridgeport Symphony's season. And we're here to sort of make the circle whole and close out this season here of Building Bridges with Mark Halstead. He's president of the Greater Bridgeport Symphony. And we'll be back to talk with Mark right after this reminder from a little ways up the valley. Expectant parents, new parents, and their families are invited to learn about the Childbirth Center and area maternity and child care resources from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, May 4th at Griffin Hospital in Derby. This free event features exhibitors, special offers, discounts, raffles, door prizes, tours of the Childbirth Center, and information about the center's classes and support groups for before and after childbirth. If you'd like more information about the Childbirth Center at Griffin Hospital, or maybe you'd like to be a vendor for this fair, you can just go to griffinhealth.org/baby. So, speaking of babies, Mark Halstead, welcome. So this new season with a new maestro and a new conductor was a brand new experience for the Greater Bridgeport Symphony. And with this fabulous theme of building bridges, how did that work out? Do you get a feeling now, as you're looking back ahead of the final performance, that you folks have succeeded in your efforts to create connections between the symphony and the many communities surrounding Greater Bridgeport?
Oh, I'd say we have, and it's been a wonderful season with Eduardo. As you may know, he's principal guest conductor for this year, and he's also a candidate to be music director as we go forward. So he actually will be his performance on a week from Saturday is sort of his audition performance for us, even though he's had the four concerts this season. But right off the bat in October, he brought in Brazilian samba music. Not something you normally hear in a symphony concert, but oh, was it great. He wanted to introduce himself in a special way, and he did so also by bringing in students from Bridgeport schools, from the University of Bridgeport, from his own teaching on Long Island. And so there were 20 students that came in with a call and response that was just dynamite, watching the audience reaction, because nobody quite knew what was going on. Eduardo leaves the stage with just a little drum that he had, and he was repeating this rhythm as though he was looking for someone or something, and going up the aisle and looking at people. Are you the one? Are you the one? And finally, the 20 drummers in the lobby answer at one point, and the whole place jumped a little bit and then cheered. And then they followed him in. They did 5 minutes of samba. He did several South American conductors then in that program, and ended with West Side Story. It was a fantastic night. And that was everybody's reintroduction to Eduardo. He'd played for us once before. But then he brought opera in, and he brought Mozart into the 20th century with a couple of pieces that he played. We had the first real holiday joyous Christmas concert mixed with beautiful classical in December. So we kind of built that bridge that we haven't had for a while. We had a little reluctance for a while to play, you know, Christmas carols and things like that. Sure. Not so great, but the audience really did enjoy it and loved it. And then in March and this concert coming, he's featuring two of our own principals, which we love, that we have these great players that are of world renown often. They're our principal players. And people see them sitting there every concert, and you don't think twice about them. But these are people with real creds that are out there. So in March, we had Keith Bonner playing the flute in three beautiful pieces. And this month we're going to have, in April, we'll have Nick Hardy, who's our principal cellist. So these are from our own family we're able to show some of this tremendous talent that we have. And this concert, the last one, is themed A Bridge to Beethoven. So it's the last of the Bridges concerts. And what Eduardo's doing is showing how Beethoven in the 18th century had this tremendous effect on two Russian composers in the 20th century. And so he's making these bridges through time, bridges through cultures, bridges through different genre of music. So we really have had a fun season. The audience has reacted extremely well. And Eduardo is a true pleasure to work with. He exudes tremendous joy from the podium, personally, when he speaks to the audience. It's a great night for everybody.
Well, as we are constantly barraged with news about inflation and cost increases, we need to bear in mind as we're articulating to the folks who are listening that the expenses for presenting entertainment like is available at the Greater Bridgeport Symphony, those costs have also increased. Everything from turning on the lights to light up the room and the stage to paying all of the various individuals on it and all of the many backstage and in the offices and the box office and in the lobbies who are helping run it. And so sustainability is critically important. So I'd like to turn the conversation a little bit more to that. First, reflecting on this Building Bridges season and two of the really important aspects of it. The first is creating audiences at the youngest possible age so that they will become sustaining supporters of organizations like the Greater Bridgeport Symphony. And it sounds like your team and Eduardo did a great job in throwing the net out to the communities in and around Bridgeport to bring young people back to actually have fun. This was, for most of them, I would imagine, may have seemed like something they didn't want to do or might have been a chore when they heard about it, but watching their faces as they're experiencing it is a whole different ballgame.
And, that is one of the key things that's happened this year. We've seen so many more younger people coming in with their families. This is something we've always encouraged, but I think the type of the music we're playing this year has made that bridge a little bit easier to walk across for people. Eduardo has a way too when he's conducting. Almost every piece he does, he's sort of a little under his breath. He says, "I hope you enjoy." He says, "I hope you enjoy," and that really comes out that he's tried to program music that, some of it is, of course, very challenging. Some of it is not all happy music. Certainly, you can't have that. You got to have some of the drama and such. But he wants to bring out that enjoyment, and when we see younger people coming in and new people coming in, what I've really seen, the saddest thing I've seen since the pandemic, is that some of our longtime subscribers got used to staying home and they're going to stay home for good. And so something we depended on for years, we have kept, I think, ahead of the curve with maintaining our subscriber base. But I can tell you, of probably 10 or 20% of our people who have dropped away, because they're just used to staying home now. So having to not only, we've always had to reach out to younger people, but now we're looking at them as being a true necessity to us going forward, because we can't depend on some of the older subscribers and such that are more comfortable at home. So it's good to see the younger faces coming in. And you're right, when I'm in the lobby afterward and seeing people come out and I see kids that are 6 years old to 14 years old or so, and I'll ask them, "Did you like it?" And they say, "Yeah." "Do you want to come?" "Yes, I want to come back. It's so great." And the parents are experiencing something of an epiphany too, because their kids are liking it, and then they realize they like it too. And there's just been this sort of, I think since World War II, after World War II, there's like a stigma to liking classical music, that there's something a little off with you. Yeah. Why do you like that stuff? But I think that people, when they realize they've really known this music their whole life, and it has parallels to what happens today in music, and especially it's so much of the exciting music that isn't just on the radio. It's opening a lot of doors for people.
And I guess if you're standing in that lobby for the purposes of monitoring how much the performance has connected with the audience, every younger person who doesn't come out the door already looking at their phone and who's actually talking about what they just saw and what they just heard is a little victory, right?
Well, you know where we see that? We didn't get a chance to do it this year. We had a scheduling mix-up, and unfortunately we couldn't do it. But just about every year, we bring the entire orchestra into one of the Bridgeport high schools. Mm-hmm. Challenging environment to bring in classical, because these kids have never heard the music for the most part. Sure. And they all start with their phones out. And the school will... It depends on if it's the last period of the day, people, oh, free period, good. I'll go to the auditorium. I'll listen to this, whatever it is. But they got their phones out. And when we did this the last time, I watched them now putting their phones away. You know, they're looking at the phone the first 5 minutes, then they're looking up a little bit from the phone, then the phone goes in their lap, and then the phone's in their pocket. And they're watching what's going on. They're listening into the experience. I think that the teamwork aspects of this are so impressive to kids these days, to think that 50 or 60 people of tremendous talent from all over the place, of all different walks of life, all different types of people are up there on stage, men, women, people of different ethnicities. They're up there playing together as a unit. That this is something that takes tremendous planning, talent. All of the stars have to line up, and they see it. They watch the organism of the orchestra. Make music.
Well,
that's the most gratifying thing we do.
Well, we can't keep doing it without support. And that's where I wanted to leave the last couple minutes for you, Mark Halstead, to speak directly to the philanthropists in the Greater Bridgeport area and to the businesses and the foundations in the Greater Bridgeport area, and just talk about why it's so important for the sustainability of an organization like Greater Bridgeport Symphony to not only bring in the people, but to be able to showcase to the people not just the music, but the other community neighbors, the corporate neighbors who are making it happen.
Well, let's bring it down from a stratospheric level to the most local of levels. The orchestras of the world today have a very special place because they're maintaining something of a basic culture that is needed in society. And if we lose this, we're going to lose so much. And it does take support. Of course, we don't support ourselves by our audiences. That hasn't happened for generations. But it takes support from an audience that's there to listen, to be inspired. But it takes support from the community that knows that the people attending these concerts come out of this with something better than they came in. It's like a continuing education for all ages, that this is something of a community asset to have an orchestra in your community. And I'd ask everyone out there, all those people on foundations and such, think about what great city doesn't have a great orchestra. And you might think, well, is the orchestra necessary? If you look at just the fact that every city needs one in order to have a cultural existence, that's a key right there. So what do we do in Bridgeport? We have been doing this for 78 years, and we've been doing it very successfully through a number of fantastic conductors and through many changing times. But we managed to relate to many different audiences, and I'm proud to say that the last few years we've made that definite appeal to younger groups. And these are kids that need this probably more than any other generation, because they've been sped up so much by their phones, their computers, by all the distractions of life. And one of the things that when we go into high schools and we talk to kids about why you might want to come to the symphony, and they make that face, you know, the symphony. And come in for an hour and a half and listen to a piece of music that's 45 minutes long. And it's something you haven't heard before, but put yourself into it. Just allow yourself to transport into, this is music that's telling a story. It's also something formative in the minds of the kids and the structuring of their minds. We're providing this, and we also make the effort in Bridgeport. We give a lot of comp tickets to kids who need them the most. We have family deals for any family that comes to see us. We want them, but we're trying to encourage those younger groups, because we know that this music has a great effect on this youngest generation. They need it more than others, and we're there to give it to them. We go to their schools We go into the community and we bring it out to the kids.
Very good.
And we want them to then be able to come back into us and get the full experience in a concert hall of seeing that 70-piece orchestra up there that's going to be this unit of great music. And open your minds to stuff and know that you're not going to like it all. You're not even going to like half of it, maybe, but there's going to be things in there that inspire you in everything that you hear. It's going to open your mind to new colors, new forms, new places, new ideas. And this is what we're all about, is the inspirational side of this, getting to the youth of all ages, I should say, but certainly those of college age and younger.
Yep.
We want you to discover the symphony. They just haven't had a lot of exposure to it, and we're there.
Mark Halstead is president of Greater Bridgeport Symphony. Their final show is this coming Saturday as we broadcast this. It's coming up on Saturday, April 13th, right at the Klein in Bridgeport, the final concert of their bridge season, A Bridge to Beethoven. If you'd like to find out more, if you'd like to learn about how you can give and support the symphony, if you'd like to get tickets, if you'd like to get your young people involved, it all starts at gbs.org. Mark, thank you so much for your time this morning. Have
such
a great
pleasure.
Show
you.
On the 13th, and we're looking forward already to what's in store for the next season.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.